Hey folks, before we dive into today's episode, we wanted to take a moment to just pay our respects to Maggie Peterson Mancuso, better known as Charlene Darling on the Andy Griffith Show. Christopher, we have not had a chance to watch an episode with the Darlings. They don't show up until later in season three, but I'm really looking forward to you getting to experience her and the Darlings because she was a very integral part of the show.
Yeah, can't wait.
So we're going to hear from both Alan Newsome and Randy Turner on their memories and thoughts about Maggie.
Hey guys, this is Alan Newsome from the Two Chairs No Waiting podcast. And I just want to take a minute just to send you a little note about Maggie Peterson, our very own Charlene, who passed away on the 15th of May. And just to remember just a little bit about the amazing things she did. She appeared at so many Mayberry events throughout the years, making fans smile and laugh. And if you've been on social media, especially Facebook and places like that, people all day today, which is just the Monday following her passing, have been posting pictures of them with Maggie, having autographs, this memories and smiles that she was able to give them and for them to cherish over their years, autographed photos and everything. Maggie was always extremely supportive of the fans of the Andy Griffith Show. She has been coming to Mayberry Days forever, it seems like, for years. And she will definitely be missed as she's not going to be able to be there any longer, at least not physically, but in spirit, she will always be with us as Charlene Darling. And her impact, even though she was only on a certain number of episodes of the Andy Griffith Show, will always be felt because every time you hear Salty Dog or There Is a Time, you're likely to think of Charlene as she sang. So just keep a good thought and a smile on your face as we remember Maggie Peterson for all the wonderful, great times that she's given us over the years and will continue to do so in reruns as time passes.
Hi, Mayberry fans. Aaron and Chris asked me to share my memories about Maggie Peterson Mancuso, who passed away on May the 15th, 2022, at the age of 81. Maggie first played Charlene Darling, the only sister of the Silent Darling Boys, in The Darlings Are Coming. In the episode's epilogue, Andy married Charlene and Dud Wash. So while her character was technically Charlene Wash in all subsequent appearances, fans still tend to just call her Charlene Darling. Her appearance in that episode was her acting debut. In her next appearance in the Andy Griffith Show, Dud called her his darling person. That phrase is actually a perfect summary of how Mayberry fans felt about Maggie. She attended Mayberry events and festivals frequently, and relished her memories of her time on the show. When a man would ask for a photo with her, she would more often than not throw her arms around his neck, just like she often did with Andy Taylor. It should come as no surprise that she was truly a sweet woman whom fans adored. Before making her acting debut in the Andy Griffith Show, Maggie had a successful career as a singer with a number of groups. Her first was a band that included her brother, and they were seen in the late 1950s on several national television variety shows. When later singing with the jazz trio that performed in Las Vegas, Lake Tahoe, and Reno, Frank Sinatra and other members of the Rat Pack often attended her shows. And as Charlene, she sang with the Dillards, the band who portrayed the Darling Brothers. Mayberry fans agree with Andy Taylor, who commented after hearing Charlene sing, "There Is a Time," "Well, I believe that's the prettiest thing I ever heard." Maggie certainly had a broader acting career than her recurring appearances as Charlene. Like many actors, she once played a different character in Mayberry. She was Doris, who was seeing Sam Jones in the next-to-last episode of the series. She also appeared as different characters in the spinoffs Gomer Pyle USMC and Mayberry RFD. All of this should come as no surprise. She was managed by Dick Link, who also managed Andy Griffith, as well as Jim Nabors, Ken Berry, Ronnie Schell, and Jerry Van Dyke. Maggie also played a recurring character in the 1960 sitcom The Bill Dana Show. She was Rose Ellen Wilkerson, the longtime sweetheart of Don Knotts' character in the 1969 comedy film The Love God, and the same year appeared in the Andy Griffith film Angel in My Pocket. And of course, Maggie played Charlene one last time in the 1986 made-for-television movie Return to Mayberry. Maggie married the jazz musician Gus Mancuso in 1987. After she retired from acting, Maggie and Gus moved from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. She stayed active in the industry, working with the Novato Film Commission in location management for films such as Casino, Mars Attacks, and Pay It Forward. Until their health failed, Maggie and Gus performed at a nightclub in Las Vegas where they lived the rest of their lives. I first met Maggie at the 2006 Mayberry Days Festival, the same event where I first met Betty Lynn. Over the years, I was lucky enough to get to know Maggie well. She was always generous with her time and was always happy to answer questions about Mayberry. I wrote an in-depth chapter about her for an upcoming book. She not only was willing to review my work to check for accuracy, but also wrote me a lovely note I will always treasure, thanking me for writing about her. Let me share one personal story that illustrates the type of a person Maggie was when it came to her fans. I've not widely announced this yet, but I'm going to be hosting a new event called the Mayberry Retreat for the first time in 2023, which will include someone who appeared in the series as a special guest at the retreat. My original plan was to begin this in 2021, but the pandemic had a different idea. I had already booked Maggie to be my special guest for the inaugural retreat. I explained to her that I'd pay all of her travel expenses and provide all of her lodging and food. When I then explained that while she would still be free to sell autographed photos like she did at other Mayberry events, I would also provide her with an appearance fee. When I did that, she actually tried to refuse any additional fee, saying she would just like to come since it sounded like a lot of fun and she would enjoy getting to see fans at a smaller event than a festival. Of course, I would not allow her to refuse an appearance fee, but I think that shows well the type of person she was when it came to her fans. It's hard to have lost another member of our Mayberry family, but fans are lucky to have such wonderful memories of Maggie, who will live forever as Charlene Darling.
Thanks so much to Alan Newsom and Randy Turner for sharing their thoughts and memories.
Should we dive into the show?
Let's go ahead and dive into the show.
Welcome to The Loaded Goat, where we take bank robbing very, very seriously.
We always do. Have you ever robbed anybody? What have you stolen?
Stole a balloon once, but they caught me.
And
my dad had to pay a quarter to pay for the balloon.
Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing I've ever stolen. What about you?
I got some grade A larceny. Is that the right word? No, I don't think I've actually ever stolen anything. Kind of accidentally left the grocery store. Like when bagging stuff on self-checkout, but nothing too maliciously. I've stolen a lot of hearts, but I usually try to return those in one piece. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that goes without saying. I mean, you steal a lot of hearts, but you usually have to give them back.
Yeah, I also feel like I'm stealing the time from our listeners today.
you've stolen a lot of my time. I will say that. So today we're doing the bank job. What did you think of this, Christopher?
It was good. It was a little too much like the other bank robbery episode that we have seen. I can't remember. It was like first season, right? I had a little bit of deja vu. That's the correct way to say it. Funny Barney bits throughout. I like any time he dresses up in costume. That was pleasant. Just an average episode with some nice elements, but not a lot of creativity to it.
So you don't realize this, but you've apparently been living under a rock and you don't pay attention to anything that took place before 1990. But this episode introduced a major character in the
Gomer universe. Pyle. I did notice that.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I thought he was annoying. I look forward to, for him growing in my heart.
I hope he does, because you're going to be seeing more of him. So we open with this episode first aired on Christmas Eve in 1962. We open with Barney reading the paper and discussing a crime wave in Marshall County that is caused by people having apathy.
Wait, I want to go back just to something. It premiered on Christmas Eve?
Yeah.
I wonder, I bet the ratings were terrible. No one sits, I mean, introduce a big character. I know people love Andy Griffith's show, all of those things. I'm trying to watch It's a Wonderful Life on Christmas Eve. I'm not trying to watch a bank robbery Andy Griffith show.
Why don't you close your eyes for a second and pretend you're back in 1962?
Okay, I'm here. There is the cold, I'm so scared of the Cold War.
There's one. You're scared of the Cold War. You have one TV in your household.
With communists.
You got with three channels. You've basically traveled, or if you've traveled with your family, there is nothing else to really do.
The after family reunion.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. There's nothing else to do after you've eaten.
Okay.
Television stations aren't really rerunning news. Movies
before CNN, really.
There's no CNN. There's no movie channels. There's nothing. It's three networks.
No Spike Network. There's no Spike TV.
There's no Spike TV. They're running new programs on every network.
I really went back in time there.
You did. I felt like I could have a career as a hypnotist the way this was going. So are you ready to dive in the episode, or do you still need history lessons?
I'm enjoying the history, but we can move on if you must.
So we open with Barney reading the paper, and he's discussing a crime wave in Marshall County that the sheriff there says is caused by apathy.
I don't know what that means. Like,
it means when apathy.
Okay. Honestly, I was like, apathy. I heard that. I probably zoned out because it was like, I kept thinking of like pachyderm and like elephants because it's like just close enough. It was like a packy. And I was like, oh man, are we talking about elephants here? I'm confused.
Nope. Just him mispronouncing apathy. So Barney says that Mayberry's a piece of cake for a criminal and that they need to step up. And he keeps going on. He finally says, we need to step up, chief. And Andrew's like, you don't call me that much. And then he figures out that he and Thelma Lou went to see Glenn Ford in a movie called G-Men, and now he's going to be Glenn Fording it all over town all the time.
I love this motif. I think it's so funny.
It is really funny. And Glenn Ford was a famous actor, but he never made a movie called G-Men. So this whole thing's just kind of made up.
Okay. Was G-Men the precursor to G.I. Jane, which is thus what led to Chris Rock getting slapped?
I would love to tell you that, you know, this all started. What happened, what we saw at the Oscars, all started with the Andy Griffith Show. It's just been building for years, but no. Okay. G-Men is actually a term for FBI agents.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's weird. The letter's not in FBI.
I think it's meant for, I think the G is for government. So Andy starts to leave, and Barney asks for a rundown, and Andy gives him the most patronizing list of errands that he is going to do. Barney goes to the bank and assesses it, and he's right. It's prime for a robbery. He then goes to do a security check with Asa, the security guard, who is an old man who is sleeping. Barney asks what his plan is for a 1012, which is a bank code for a bank robbery. Asa says he's heard of that before, but he wasn't sure where. And then he realizes it was from that movie G-Men with Glenn Ford, which is really funny how they keep tying it all back.
I love it.
Asa said he would pull his gun. And he takes his gun out and it falls apart. Turns out he's lost the screws to his revolver. His bullets are also moldy.
Which is disgusting. Yeah, I don't understand how your belt would get moldy. His belt was hanging so awkwardly on his body. I couldn't figure out where that man's hips were. It's not something I needed to know. I was just surprised.
Barney also shows him his own bullet and how clean and pristine it is. And Asa admires it. He says he
probably washes it once a week.
Probably does. He
leaves it in the pocket.
Yeah. He says he's heard a lot about Barney's bullet. You know, the funny thing about Asa is I can't remember if Asa makes any more appearances in this series. He is so funny and so memorable that I've often sometimes when talking with friends, you know, you talk about lack security at like a federal building or something like that, or just like security that takes forever. You're like, well, they got a couple of aces working up there. So that's why they, that's why you can't get in.
Yeah. I like that. It sounds good. Cause yeah. Also if they overhear, they're going to think you're calling them aces, you know, they're like really good.
Well, I typically would not ever use the term you're an ASA in front of a security guard trying to get in. It's talking about it later.
Oh, it's just rude if you talk behind their back. You got to talk to their face.
Thank you, life coach. Andy comes in and Barney says he should go to lunch and let off some steam. Barney gets upset and says he's making a jerk over him. Mr. Merriman, who's the bank president, comes out and asks what's wrong. Barney explains that the place is not prepared for a 10-12. He and the teller say it's a great impression of Glenn Ford.
It's so good. I literally pulls him over. He's like, check this out. I thought it was going to go negative, that he was going to, yeah, I couldn't figure out what was going to happen. Then pulled it, made fun of him for an imitation. So good.
They get in the car to leave, and it turns out Andy also saw Asa's, that same gun Asa had when he was a little kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I missed that. That's funny.
They, later, Barney and Andy stop at Miss Kelsey's to take in her laundry because she's out of town. Barney is getting upset. I get.
I would be upset by that, too. Yeah, I'm a deputy. I'm going to take down and fold your laundry? Come on.
I mean, you know, I once heard a cop say, you folks serve the public trust just a little too far. This kind of feels like this might be the case.
I like it.
So later, Barney is taking down the clothes off the line, and up comes Leon, a little kid eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with the
Leon is a new dream character. He's replaced Tex in my heart. Have we had him before?
So yes, this Leon is played by Clint Howard. Ryan.
That's
Howard's
what I watched the credits seeing it, but they didn't ever show that. But yeah. So cute.
And he's so cute. And the funny thing is what makes me laugh so much is everybody talks to Leon like he's just another guy in town. Like what's so hilarious about Barney? He's taking down these clothes and he's complaining about, well, Leon, he's not letting me do this, or there's all these problems. And Leon's just standing there. You're kind of like, does everybody think this is just going to compute in Leon's head?
Well, he looks like a cowboy. He's got tassels. He's got the fringe. He's right there, man on the road.
Right. So Barney carries on a conversation with him about how he would like to show them what an easy mark the bank is. And then he looks at a dress that he's got and he gets an idea, and we go to commercial.
Wonder what the idea is going to be.
Don't know. I mean, obviously, we know. After the after the commercial, Barney comes in dressed like a woman saying he's Mrs. Magruder's cousin. Here to clean the bank, and Miss Magruder apparently has a fungus of the knee.
Well, I've had plenty of fungi in my life, never on the knee.
I don't know. That would have to be one bad fungus.
You know, I could see the knee pit. I could see knee pit, but I was
knee pits get fungus. Yeah,
I could see
knee pits get fungus. I don't know if knee pit funguses are debilitating.
I would agree with that.
So he starts to clean the place, and they quickly realize it's Barney. They shock him, and Barney falls back into the vault and shuts the door. They are all really worried because they don't have a key because it's on a time lock and won't open until 8 a.m. the next morning.
Which is ridiculous. Also, did this remind you of one other thing? It's like when he locks himself in the cell.
Locks himself in the cell.
Sorry, I cut you off, though.
No, he locks himself in the cell all the time. He also, Die Hard. The safe is on a time lock and Die Hard, you know, but really Everett Greenbaum, who co-wrote this episode, said the level of incompetence was inspired by the Italian film Big Deal on Madonna Street, which is a really funny movie about a group of goofy thieves.
Was that okay? So there's a commonality here, though. Is it that shows that are set on Christmas Eve always have a time lock safe? Die Hard, that's Christmas Eve. This episode aired on Christmas Eve. The Italian Job, maybe it was Christmas Eve. That's what I call any Italian movie that's not The Bicycle Thief.
You're a cinephile, aren't you?
Hey, I've seen Bicycle Thief. I should get some credit.
You get some credit for seeing Bicycle Thief. The Bicycle Thief. Actually, what it's called is The Bicycle Thieves, but it is one of the... It's a great movie. So later, we're introduced to Gomer Pyle, played by Jim Nabors, who is trying to open the safe with a blowtorch. Everybody who's listening to this podcast knows who Gomer Pyle is. This was not the first episode filmed with Gomer Pyle. That was actually Man in a Hurry, but that doesn't show up. That doesn't happen for a few more episodes. But
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this is our first introduction of him. Christopher, I hope you really come to like him because he's a pretty endearing character.
All right. I'm ready to be impressed.
Barney breaks out of the vault by kicking out the connecting wall at the beauty salon. He then storms out and takes off his dress. Back at the bank, everyone is upset and Barney comes in and scolds them. He catches the attention of a stranger before he storms off. The stranger in the bank walks up to his partner and they were going to really just originally pass a bad check, but they decide to rob the bank.
Terrifying. This is the moment. This is kids. This is the moment when you got to walk away.
Yeah.
Things get too hot. It's okay. Yeah. I'm back now.
Speaking of hot, as Gomer is wrapping up, they hear Gomer scream and Gomer says, "Oh, I forgot to tell you, the door is still hot."
I like that line a lot. That was great.
I too. Later, the bank owner walks past Leon, who offers him his PB&J. It's the next morning. He opens the bank and one of the men comes in with a gun. He thinks it's Barney. The teller sees this and goes to the sheriff, who is fed up with Barney and really goes over there to shut everything down. The bank robber is finishing the robbery and in comes Asa, and they're both told to lean up against the wall.
Can you imagine what a trip this would be? Like, you're trying to rob a bank. You think it's going to be all intense and everybody keeps just minimizing you because they think you're the deputy in a buff.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's got to be nuts. Andy walks in, just takes the robber's gun out of his hand and tells him enough's enough. I mean, it's just great. And then the teller looks out the window and screams.
This is similar courage that Andy has in the first season when he's walking towards somebody who's just shooting a gun. Everybody knows he's a bad shot.
He says he's a good shot. It's Luke's a good shot. So if he wanted to hit you, he'd hit you. Yeah, don't ever walk towards a guy just because he's a bad shot, because he might actually get lucky and hit you. Just FYI, if you find yourself.
This one's for the kids. This episode is.
Yeah. No. Next time you're walking, next time you go to your local meth lab, I just want to give you that advice. So she screams because she just sees Barney walking down the street, and the robber grabs Ace's gun. Andy tells Asa to break away. The robber fires the gun, Ace's gun, and it breaks. It was almost like one of the, there used to be like toy guns where if you just hit a button, the entire gun would just fall apart. And that's what this looks like.
Yeah, the whole thing falls apart. It's great.
Outside, Barney is writing the getaway driver a parking ticket, which, what a getaway. That's one heck of a getaway driver, is that he parks in a spot that's going to cause attention. And when he tries to run, Barney pulls out his gun and arrests him. And he comes out and tells him he can add bank robbery
to the
charge. And we can go to commercial. Yeah, that's great. In the epilogue, Barney is chewing out the newspaper editor for getting his name wrong. And Asa comes in and he's gotten screws for his gun and he's also cleaned the bullets. So Andy says he and Barney have the most beautiful bullets in town. And then Andy asks who's watching the bank, and Asa runs off and Barney tells him he forgot his gun. It falls off the desk and breaks, which I assume it just broke. I mean, it's not because of the screws being loose. It's just so old.
Well, because he had nice steel screws.
It falls off the desk, breaks, and that's how the show ends.
Ends in disappointment, really. We don't know if the bank is safe. What progress have we made here, right? Mayberry still is very robbable.
Ace's gun is broken. The walls to the beauty salon have been kicked out.
Yeah, we're worse for the wear, for sure.
We really are. When really, if Barney had just left things well enough alone, somebody would have passed a bad check, and that would have been it.
How many whistles would you give this?
I'd give this one 9.
Nine. Wow. Okay. How much are you giving it for being Gomer's first appearance?
Actually, you know what? I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to give it 8. And the reason I'm going to give it 8 is because you got character introductions. You've got good Barney. You've got Leon, which is just so funny. You've got Asa. You've just got a really good group of stuff and a story that just moves.
Yep. I would give it a 7 only just because it's a little bit of a replication of one we had before. But all of those things you just said.
That is fair. I appreciate, I can see where you're coming from. Any final thoughts?
No, but I did think about it for a little bit.
Thank you for your consideration.
I don't want people to just think these are off the cuff, you know?
No, not at all. Thank you, folks, for listening. Check us out on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. And if you think about it, subscribe. Next week, we're going to review One Punch Opie. Until then, Christopher, don't come down with a pappy.